The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome to the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop. It was a rather lackluster performance from England at Wembley as they could only manage a 1-1 draw against Hungary in World Cup qualifying. In fact, they had to come from behind to do so. Salah would score from the penalty spot after a high kick from Luke Shaw. We'd see the visitors order a spot kick. John Stones would score just before half time. And in the end, it finishes England 1, Hungary 1. What's interesting when you take a look at this England starting 11 is the fact that it's kind of the one that fans wanted. Just the one holding midfield, you've got Rice in the middle, you've got Mount, you've got Foden, you've got Sterling, you've got Kane, you've got Jack Grealish as well. As we welcome Don Hutchinson to the show. But Craig, I kind of wanted to start with you. Why have you got so many good players on the pitch and how could they put mediocre performance?
This is a myth that you just get all your most attacking players.
Right.
Or not them all, but you get a bunch of attacking players and you go, right, here's what you wanted. This is going to be better. Doesn't always work. For example, I thought they missed the energy and the drive of Calvin Phillips, who does get forward but is a more defensive player. And sometimes it's about the balance of the team and it just didn't look right.
No.
And, you know, on top of that, Phil Foden's been decent at the start of the season, but he's been poor for England, was left out in the Euros. Grealish was actually one of the better players.
It's strange to take Grealish off.
But still,
wasn't it?
No end product takes him off. Mount and Sterling were off the pace, and Harry Kane is out of form.
Yeah.
So look, England are going to qualify for the World
yes.
Cup. It's going to happen. That was never in doubt. But I go back to the point I've been making all the time is when it gets to the crunch with this talent pool, is Southgate the man with the mindset to get the best out of this talent pool?
Right.
That's the big question.
Yes.
You look at, you know, what Klopp's got and what Guardiola's got and what other great managers have got, their job's to get the best out of that talent pool.
Yep.
There is no doubt England have a seriously talented bunch of players. And getting to the finals are great, albeit they lost. But it wasn't brilliant getting to the finals of the Euros. It was okay. Can he get them to be 20 or 30% better?
Yeah.
I actually think they can be.
What do you think, Don? We welcome Don to the show. Talk about the game overall. Just not great, was it, from England?
No, it was a poor performance. I understand Gareth Southgate's loyalty towards his players. I mean, he made 9 changes from the Andorra game, so he was loyal towards Harry Kane and Raheem Sterling for what they've done over the years. But I think at international level, I think it showed up tonight that you can't carry players, even against the Hungarian side, who were very good on the night, but England battered them away from home. Harry Kane's way off form. Raheem Sterling's got a lack of confidence. So you go into this sort of game and you're trying things. And I don't mind Gareth Southgate trying things because, as Craig said, they're going to qualify. It's absolutely nailed on. So you make 9 changes and you expect it to gel. On another day, it probably will because the quality's there. But as I said, you're playing Harry Kane, who's off form. Raheem Sterling's got a lack of confidence. So it's one of them where I think, like Craig said, I think what he's trying to do, Gareth Southgate, he's trying to get an extra 10% of the squad and the personnel that he's got. And he's trying slowly to move away from Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice. And he's trying to play a different system. And that was the perfect game for him to play that sort of system. On another day, it works. Everyone's saying, great, happy days. Players got minutes. Players got confidence. Didn't work tonight.
On paper, Shang, it should be working.
On paper, it should. But I think Craig hit on the point that squad that's sitting in that starting 11, desperately imbalanced. For me, Foden and Mount, a little bit too far from the attacking three. And on the day, I think you saw, I want to say, limitations of the front three. And I thought Harry Kane was as poor or as ineffective as Sidney has seen in an England shirt. You want to put that down to a one-off. Raheem Sterling has been struggling with form and confidence even before the Euros. But then Gareth Southgate shows such faith in him, and he was outstanding in the tournament, particularly in the early stages. Jack Grealish continues to be this enigma, and Craig touches on it regularly, how many touches he takes. He seems more interested in either walking the ball into the goal or getting an assist, as opposed to taking opportunities when they first present themselves. And for me, too, there were a couple of opportunities that were there for him to shoot, take the keeper on, and he didn't. And it invited Hungary to drop men in and soak up that pressure, and it all came to nothing. So you saw a front three totally out of sync, out of form, out of balance, and then two of the more creative midfielders in Mount and Foden not getting forward. So right. As a result, it just, as you described it, Dan, forgettable.
Well, I think Southgate himself, whether he's listening to press or I don't believe for a minute he's listening to supporters, if I'm being honest, and supporters might not be happy with me saying that, but the bottom line is managers and players don't.
Yeah.
But if he's listening to the press and some of the pundits, I think he's got his head in the clouds and I think he's got a big problem. England, and I know I've said they can play a lot better and a lot more with a lot more pizzazz, and I still think that's the case. England are not good enough to go to a major tournament and play one holding midfielder and just say to the big boys, we're going to outplay you.
Right.
I think the balance has to be right with a Rice and a Phillips or whoever it is, and I think if you give that lack of protection against the better teams to the back four, your back four will get exposed. And that's always been a big concern with England. Although they defended pretty well at the Euros, they had good protection. You take that away by putting an extra forward-thinking player in and it doesn't gel going forward, you're exposing yourself at the back. And I don't think England are ready for that. I think England's best platform is the two holding midfielders in front with a bit of extra energy from Phillips going forward and then getting the right balance of players ahead of that.
Right.
And I still think England can do that and play better than they have been. But as for going in against a France or a Brazil or a Spain when we saw the way they played,
yeah,
with one holding midfielder, that's not going to work.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? You take a look at the odds to win the World Cup, Don. England coming in third, and I suppose you look at the fact when they made the Euros final, the World Cup semi-final. That's all well and good, but you look at the teams around them. Spain, young, exciting. Italy, of course, winning the Euros. France have got all that talent. Chiche's got so many players to choose from Brazil. Just to pick up on Craig's point, there's a lot of quality managers around him as well. You've got Didier Deschamps, yeah, you've got Mancini, obviously you've got Chiche at Brazil as well. You've got all of these quality managers. Gareth Southgate, underqualified, you could very much argue, for this job. Can he get that extra 20, 30%?
He can, but when you look at those teams that he's going to be facing, or potential teams he's going to be facing, they are way behind, in my opinion, because when I look at England, their best style of play is getting into people's faces, stopping them from playing high-tempo football, being aggressive. Now, when you come to play the likes of Argentina and France and Brazil and Germany and Portugal and the big boys, they retain possession. And England showed against Italy, when they were 1-0 up inside, 15 minutes at Wembley, there was a 45-minute period from minute 1 to 45 where they had Italy. But they didn't have the confidence. And towards the end of the game, they had them at, you know, the half an hour mark. They should have, on another day, they should have, could have, went and scored 2 and 3 if they had been ruthless. Now, they weren't ruthless. They panicked. And they allowed Italy back into the game second half. Then what did the Italians do? They dominated the ball. So that's the percentage gain I think Gareth's got. He's got to try and find a way either stick on what he's got and saying, right, this is what's got us to a Euros final. Let's take this into the World Cup. Let's see how far we can get. But I just watched the other teams and I think they're far more skilled at keeping hold of the ball more so than England are.
But they shouldn't be. So going back to that point, and I slightly disagree about these teams being better. They may be passing it better, but why? They shouldn't be. There's 5 Man City players in that team.
Yeah.
Man City is one of the toughest teams to get a place. Yet these guys get a place. And by the way, they pass the ball for fun. You've got Luke Shaw, who's been brilliant in the last 18 months for Manchester United. You've got all these, you know, got Mason Mount, who's been the key player, one of the key players for Chelsea. So why? Why should this England team not go in with a chest out against these other teams and go, we can outpass you, we can beat you, we've got more pace. I mean, Jadon Sancho,
they can't in the middle of the park, Craig, can they? They can't in the middle of the park, can they? Where England are really good with Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice is getting around people, stopping people from playing. They haven't got Jorginho's, they haven't got Verratti's, they haven't got a Busquets.
Well, Calvin Phillips is a very good passer of the ball. You offered Calvin Phillips or Declan Rice to any of these big clubs around Europe or the Premier League, I think they'd take them. I think there's a systematic problem that's not festering itself at the moment in terms of the public. That you mentioned it. Gareth Southgate, nice guy, and you know, you can't deny taking somebody to a World Cup semi-final and taking them to a Euro final. But sometimes the picture is clouded by other things.
Right.
Teams you play against,
yeah.
Brackets that you're in. And the question remains, this England team, for me, looking at all the other teams around Europe, is as talented. The question is, tactically and team selection-wise, is it going to fall down with a manager making the wrong decisions?
Sure.
Rather than a Roberto Mancini in Italy making great decisions. But look at these teams.
You think for me, though, let's keep in mind, we are talking about a team sitting top of their qualifying group, a team that got a World Cup semi-final and a Euro final. But does Gareth Southgate, to the criticism, does Gareth Southgate have the players in different positions, in the kind of depth that a Roberto Mancini does to change things? And I think every time you see England try to change things against less opposition, it falls flat. And let's be honest, Hungary are less opposition.
Yep.
But when you try to change things, when you try to be more attack-minded, it falls flat. But when England sit back into what has suited them in the last few years under Gareth Southgate, it's worked. And you're right. Yes, the draw and the side of the bracket that England fell into in both those major tournaments helped them out a lot. But let's not get away from their successes, because there are many countries who would be happy to boast of as much.
The point is, I think with England, there's a Belgium scenario here.
Right.
And maybe they've got more time in their hands, because this Belgium team, obviously, clearly, but this was the generational chance, and the golden generation was, what, from around 2012, 2014 onwards.
Yeah.
Got walloped at the Euros by Wales in 2016, That was an eye-opener for them. Changed the manager, brought a very experienced manager in, but some of these guys are getting older now. England have that opportunity.
Right.
England, we can argue the point, who had the better players coming through in their generation, England or Belgium, I don't care. England have the potential to go and say, yeah, we're in it with the big boys here, we're expecting to go all the way and potentially win it. Why not? The problem is that quickly goes away.
But for me, though, every generation of England players seems to be the golden generation.
Well, we're a golden country.
We have the same
really is at the moment.
That's the way it is.
He might be off form. Raheem Sterling and Phil Foden might not be his best and blah, blah. But these are great talents. So he's going to have to find a way to nurture these talents and get the... I'm sorry, but, we're not at the level of France, or we're not at the level of Brazil, or we're not at the level of Spain. I mean, Spain are a fledgling side.
Yes.
This, we're not at the level with the players in this England squad, is not going to cut it anymore.
Let's move on from England, shall we, and touch on Scotland. Again, we've got Don and Craig here.
I'm going to tell you now.
Yes, go on.
I'm not.
Okay. Wow, okay. Don, Scotland with a 1-0 win over the Faroe Islands. You almost blew this. You were tweeting a storm up. You were worried, Don.
Dan, I did not know whether to laugh or cry watching that game, because honestly, we should have been 3-0 down at half-time. How we came in at 0-0, I will never, ever know. And then John McGinn, just before this Lyndon Dykes goal, missed an absolute sitter. He had a header from 6 yards, John McGinn, that he missed. And then great ball into the box. Lyndon Dykes took a deflection, then hit his chest. It went to VAR because they thought it was a handball. I still think it come off his chest, but it's not conclusive. But listen, we'll take it. It's one of them games where people will say, well, it's only the Faroes. When England beat Andorra, it's only Andorra. And that's right, by the way, correct, because we were absolutely terrible. We were awful. But that's four wins on the spin. No, that's four wins on the spin in the campaign. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
exactly. We beat Moldova. We go a few points behind Denmark. We can secure a playoff position. What's not to love about the 3 points?
Well done for not mentioning you scored against San Marino. Somehow crowbarring that into it, Don.
Well, it was only a matter of time.
It was an artificial surface, wasn't it, Don?
It was, mate, yeah.
Which is very ironic.
Why is that? Denmark, by the way, have qualified now.
Yeah, they're not. It's Scotland are playing for the playoff.
Yes, exactly.
So it's very ironic that the Faroes have put an artificial pitch down. Because when I went to play in the Faroes, and I stayed in the hotel there at the grass roof.
At a grass roof?
Yeah, grass roof. So they can put grass on the roof of a hotel, but wow. They can't put it on a football pitch.
Wow.
Don't ask me why it was a grass roof. I don't know. I've no idea.
Who scored in that game, Craig?
No, not me.
Oh, I thought you scored against the Faroe Islands.
I played against them twice.
Oh,
it's one of my proudest moments. I actually played in the Faroes very early in my Scotland career. We beat them 2-0. No such struggles as this. I did score against them in Toddrey.
Right.
One of my proudest moments. But I didn't watch this game. I was watching the England game.
Okay.
But I was following the news on social
media. We don't need to fill time on this game. It's fine.
To be honest, I didn't even want to talk about it.
Right, well, no, there we go. It's just a fleeting moment because Don wanted to talk about it.
Did he? So that's producing the show.
If you want more from Don and his opinions on Scottish football, be sure to check out Extra Time, which as always is available over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
It should be an absolute belter, shouldn't it? The first Clásico of the season, Barcelona taking on Real Madrid. Both teams have had somewhat of a bumpy ride so far this season. As we welcome in from Barcelona, Gemma Soler joins us. Gemma, I'm going to use a name that I haven't said for a very long time here. Kun Agüero could feature in El Clásico. Before we get to his fitness, is he allowed to play? Have they registered him? Is all the paperwork done? Are we sorted there?
Hola, Dan. Yes, he signed it and he will be able to play, not only in El Clásico, because the Argentinian, he's almost fit. So probably he's been training 2 days, yesterday and earlier today. And so maybe we could see him some minutes against Valencia this weekend.
How do you feel, boys, like with regards to Kun Agüero at his peak, one of the best strikers in the world? Mm-hmm. Obviously, still has got some of that within him. Mm-hmm. Does it lift you as a team to have someone like that in it? Or are we like, oh, my God, we're relying on this guy who hasn't played properly for a long time?
The latter.
Really?
I think, you know, getting players back fit always gives you a lift, but getting them up to speed is the key.
Right.
And clearly he's not. But look, this is a desperate situation. At Barcelona, they could go, 8 points behind with a loss. They haven't played well. They've really lacked in that area. De Jong's played, Depay's played. But clearly Agüero, a fit Agüero, and he had a lot of injury problems in his last season, as well as, I believe, an issue with COVID at Man City. It's a problem. And this problem won't go away if Ronald Koeman rushes this guy back.
Right.
Because that'll just make the situation worse. The injuries just keep piling on, then he's chasing his tail. At his age, it takes longer to recover and recuperate. So this is a very delicate situation in terms of when you play this guy.
You look at their results, you've got Valencia this weekend, then Real Madrid. There is that kind of outside pressure, isn't there, to bring someone like Agüero into the starting 11, even though he's not 100%.
Absolutely, there is. And for all the reasons that you just detailed, Dan. But things have not been great for Barcelona so far this season. Even when you look at their starting lineup, Memphis Depay played through the middle in the last league outing. You want to push him all wide. You want him to create. And you don't, or you already know that you can't rely on Luke de Jong as your out-and-out striker. So while, yes, there's huge concerns around Kun Agüero, his injury history, just knowing what he can bring, if he's at all fit, if he shows something this weekend against Valencia, if he gets some minutes, I think it's closer to being a boost than it just to being falling flat or not having any kind of a reaction within the dressing room.
Keep forgetting about Luke de Jong. Also, another forgotten man, of course, is Dembele. Once again, Gemma, a lot of injuries has plagued his time at Barcelona. However, he's back training. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, Dembele, he has trained as well today with teammates, but I think we have to be more patient, more cautious about the Frenchman because he had knee surgery, four months out of the team. And he is a player that Ronald Koeman needs him so much. So he's going to be very cautious about the Frenchman because he needs someone that... Barcelona attack has been so predictable lately, so he needs someone like Ousmane Dembele. Also, always in his press conference after matches, Ronald Koeman say he needs a winger to make the field wider, and Dembele could be that man. But also caution, because there is another issue. He hasn't signed his renewal. This could become a problem for this player. And according to Charles, maybe we will be able to see him at El Clásico, but not before that, definitely, because his recovery, I think it needs a little bit more time.
Meanwhile, Gemma, we've heard so much about the financial problems at Barcelona, hundreds of millions of euros in debt. So this story surprised me that some magic investors are going to come in and give Barcelona the money to go and get Erling Haaland. This has got to be complete nonsense, isn't it?
Well, OK, that comes because the CEO, the money person at the board of members, Ferran Reverte, he gave an interview yesterday and he said that they could be maybe next year signing a big name, a big player. Why? Because even they are in a critical economical situation, they are a big club, attractive for investors to give them some credit. They already had that with Goldman and Sachs, 600 million euros. And he thinks they could do that to have a shining name like the Norwegian striker. Also, Laporta, the president, he has a very good relation with his agent, Mino Raiola. The father of Haaland was in Barcelona, was one of the first meetings on that mediatic tour they did this summer. But for me, the big question is, okay, maybe they will be able to have the foundings, the investment to make this signing. For me, the big question is related to the fair play limits, because they are already up this salary budget they have. They remember that they passed from being the first budget in La Liga to number 7 next season. So I don't know how they are going to make it. Maybe this Coutinho operation you talked earlier in Newcastle, something like that. But for me, that's the main point about being able to make that signing. And I think also, Dan, that they need to bring some sparkling to the Barcelona supporters, because one victory in 6 games is quite tough.
It would be a lot of sparkle, boys. But does Barcelona still have the allure?
Well, put it another way. If Real Madrid go out and sign Mbappe and Haaland, where does that leave Barca? Who else?
Yeah, that's...
Who else is out there at the moment that comes in...
Messi.
...to that category? Who comes into that category? And the answer is... Well, off the top of my head, I think the answer is nobody, really. So... If Real Madrid, and I'm not suggesting they're going to, but I think there is every chance they will try and scoop both of those players up. I don't think Barcelona can sit back and let that happen. And I think they know that, but the finances are a different...
I agree.
Does it still have the appeal, Shaq? Barcelona's one of the greatest clubs in the world.
Yes. Barcelona as a club, by its name, absolutely yes, it does. I think one of the major issues for Barcelona right now, and you see it in their current league position, if Barcelona miss out on Champions League football, and let's be honest, what we've seen from them so far this season, that's a possibility. If Barcelona do not have Champions League football, there is absolutely no chance Erling Haaland goes there to just buy this time before playing in that competition. I think that moves Barcelona very way down the pecking order in terms of the clubs that are interested, or he is interested in, more to the point.
Meanwhile, Gemma, finally, of course, Spain losing that Nations League final against France, controversially, after Mbappe's late goal. I imagine everyone's taking it very well in Spain, aren't they? No complaints, no problem, very happy with the ruling.
No, not at all. It's been 48 hours and the supporters are still outraged. There's a lot of skepticism. Now, you see, everyone is an expert about being a referee here in Spain, in the media, in the bars, everywhere. Everyone is talking about that action, that Mbappé goal. So, and also here in Spain, they are remembering that this same referee, he made a mistake in the game, in the defeat against Sweden. So it's like there is a lot of criticism also because there was no line to sign the offside. So people are quite upset. But we have remembered some actions, and the Spanish referee took the same decision in similar action. We have two recent games, one in Granada, Roberto Soldado. He scored a goal in that same action, and the Spanish referee decided that should go on. We had another example with a game in Las Palmas, Tenerife. Same decision. And we have a game, El Celta Levante. Santi Mina scored a goal, and the referee said that it was offside. Well, the board of the referees in Spain, Velasco Carballo, said that that was a mistake. So the Spanish referees say that Mbappé action should be like that. But supporters go on another side. They say that maybe the rule is like that, but it's not fair that Mbappé late goal. Spain has been also done 10 years without clinching a title. So I think when you guys come back for El Clásico, Spain will be still disappointed and outraged.
Well, the offside was negligible once Eric Garcia makes a play for the ball.
Yes, yeah. And touches, within the laws.
And touches the ball, whether we agree or not. But going back to the disappointment for Spain and not, not winning the Nations League, spare me. If I was a supporter of the Spanish national team, I'd actually have been very encouraged from what I saw over the course of both games. Yeah, I mean, I would be slightly concerned that they don't seem at the moment to have somebody as clinical up front as they've had in the past, and that could be a stumbling block for them. And yeah, there are some concerns about partnerships at the back, which Luis Enrique changed again for some reason, but he changed. But I think in general, with this sort of hybrid Spanish team with experienced players, younger players, some sort of middle of the road, I actually was very, very encouraged the way they played.
Right.
However, it boils down to the simplicity of taking your chances.
Yes.
So I would be disappointed not to win a tournament, but I wouldn't be disappointed in the road that Luis Enrique, I think, has taken this Spanish side down.
Speaking of disappointment, big disappointment, of course, this week, no Gab in the Gab and Jules podcast.
By the way, he misses a lot of these.
Are you keeping notes?
No, we have to watch these freaking promos.
Julius is joined by Nadim. Gemma, thank you very much. And Frank LeBeouf joins him as well on the podcast as well.
These guys get nothing better to do.
La Liga then, back this weekend after the international break. Saturday sees Levante against Getafe, Real Sociedad against Mallorca. Then on Sunday, the eye-catching game certainly is Barcelona against Valencia, live on ESPN Plus, coverage starting at 2:30 Eastern.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
A big game then in Columbus. The US men's national team taking on Costa Rica. Got that game live on ESPN2 tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern. Here's a look ahead to it. Seve's joined by Jermaine and Casey.
Columbus, Ohio, for so many years, the home of USA against Mexico, Dos a Cero. Just about 24 hours away from a qualifier with a little different feel. the United States welcomes Costa Rica to lower.com field. Huge match coming up for both teams. The United States, fresh off a 1-0 defeat in Panama, leaves them tied for second in CONCACAF's World Cup qualifying. Welcome into our desk alongside Casey Keller, Jermaine Jones. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us. Guys, we can focus on Costa Rica in a second, but we got to look back at what happened in Panama. A 1-0 defeat, Jermaine. We haven't heard from you since. What was your reaction? Let's leave the lineup for a second, just to the performance from the players.
You know, when I watched the game, I was really disappointed with the whole situation of the game, how they played, you know, because we talked about it after the game in the Jamaica game. We said, like, what they have to do is going down there trying to really show the fans and show the people that we want to win and we want to get 3 points. But when I watched this game, I was disappointed because there was no fight, there was no, like, no hunger to get goals and score goals. There were so many mistakes, and I think it's just not enough if you see that game.
Yeah, it was frustrating because you really saw a team that was unbelievably disjointed. There was no cohesion whatsoever. The passing was to no one. The runs weren't where they needed to be. You know, we thought we got rid of this after the first two and a half matches, but then it came creeping right back in. Nobody showing for the ball. People looking and running in the wrong direction, and just the connection just was not there. And it's frustrating because at any time you see a side that maybe the day's off, maybe the runs aren't great, maybe the like I said, the connection between the different groups, but you would see that fight to try to get a result. And in the end, we saw neither.
Is it a lack of leadership? Like, what are we seeing when we watch this team?
Yeah, I think it's like what we said before. Like, when you see the game against Jamaica, you had somebody like Tyler Adams in there. And I think it's like what the mistake for me, if I would say something about this whole situation with Greg Berhalter and was it right to rotate and whatnot, I would say maybe keep the spine, keep you the goalkeeper, Matt Turner, then you have Tyler Adams, and then maybe Pepe in front of there, in the middle. And for me, it's just like one thing when I say, and when I hear always about this rotation, these guys are still young, and I think we don't need to see 7 changes. I think, like, at the end, he's the coach and he can make the changes, but I think in general it was not enough. And now you have to – I will always take the coach away. I would say it's on the players, and the players don't show the good game.
All right, let's listen to what Greg Berhalter had to say just moments ago. He did talk about the decision to make those 7 changes and where that responsibility lies.
You know, in terms of squad rotation – you know, one thing I want to make completely clear is when I took responsibility for the result the other day, you know, it was not aimed at the choice of players, you know, because, you know, we believe in every single player in this squad, and I don't regret in any moment, you know, playing that lineup. You know, I regret more of, you know, our performance and some of the attacking adjustments we could have made in that game to be more mobile, to be moving more, but not personnel.
Casey, to that point, was it an over-rotation? Was 7 just too many changes, or is it down to, as Jermaine says, the players?
I think it's a combination. I wouldn't have changed 7. I mean, you're talking about a very young team. I keep hearing about how young this team is, that it could have actually played in the Olympics. It was so young. But why can't they play a midweek game? I mean, the top players in the world, you ask Messi, you ask Ronaldo, how many midweek games they take off. They play 60 games, Champions League, highest level, going with their country. They don't need the weekend off. If you got a guy that's banged up, you already knew a couple guys were banged up, and they were out of it already, and make a couple more changes. But look, I understand this is unique because you've got these 3 games wedged into this close area, and you got travel down to Panama, and I understand an idea of putting fresh bodies out on the field, but you have to trust those fresh bodies. Greg says he does, okay, but we didn't see it at the weekend.
Yeah. So this team has failed to pick up points in Panama. They dropped points at home against Canada. How much pressure is then on the U.S. in this game, Jermaine, against Costa Rica?
I think there's a lot of pressure. Now coming back after winning the game in Austin against Jamaica, now you're going down to Panama, losing 1-0, and now you come back to Costa Rica. And don't get it twisted, Costa Rica is a good team. No. So it doesn't mean that you come out here to Columbus and you just run over them and you win. So now it's pressure on the U.S. team, and now they have to show how they can handle pressure. Because if you look forward, the next games is Mexico, and then you're going down to Jamaica. So that's the next tough game. So
I think if you look at the qualifying cycles, there's always that moment where a result doesn't go your way, and then if the next result doesn't go your way, now you're looking over your shoulder. In those years when the teams qualified, there was always that moment where, okay, we win this game, things get a lot more comfortable. This is one of those moments where you had a tough result down in Panama, some other results kind of went your way a little bit. So now you win this game and the ship's right. You lose this game and you're significantly under the eight ball.
We heard from Greg Berhalter in his press conference there also of note. Anthony Robinson, Weston McKennie still doubts, but potentially available for the U.S. team tomorrow. Our coverage starts on television at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. It's the United States against Costa Rica from Lower.com Field in Columbus, Ohio. Let's send it back now to the ESPN FC studios.
Such a big game, of course, for all the reactions to the result in Columbus. Be sure to check out the latest edition of Football Americas with James later this week here on ESPN+. Meanwhile, big news today regarding the USL Super League. This, of course, a project which will come to fruition in 2023. The big announcement today is that Amanda van der Voort will be the new president. And earlier, she sat down and spoke to Julie Fowdy.
Hi, Amanda. Congratulations on your new appointment as president of the USL Super League. The league, as Dan was mentioning in the graphic, is set to start in 2023, so about a year and a half away. Given that timeline, what are you most excited about with this new league?
Wow. Yeah. Thanks, Julie. It's so great to be here and excited, excited about the Super League. And when I started talking to the leadership of the USL a couple months ago, actually, I was just so inspired by the vision of the leadership, really, and their commitment to growing women's soccer across this country. You know, I mean, we've been talking about developing the pathway for players, both, you know, at the professional level and the W League that we announced earlier this year and the youth kind of system. So that pathway for me is something really exciting, I think. And it's a privilege. It's a real privilege to be able to work with the soccer community, the women's soccer community, coaches, players, staff, executives, really, to grow and build this league.
You bring a wealth of so many different perspectives. Having played collegiately, you've coached at all these different levels. You've worked with FIFA Pro and MLS and with the president of the United Soccer Coaches. So you know the ecosystem, clearly, of soccer in this country. Where do you think the USL Super League fits in this ecosystem and makes it better, in fact?
Yeah, I mean, I think bringing together all of those experiences that I have is quite a privilege and quite an opportunity. And to be able to see the landscape and what the opportunity is within the women's soccer community is something really special. So when we look at the USL Super League and where it sits, recognizing that it's the top level of women's professional soccer within the USL, which, you know, has a proven structure that mirrors the global game. So we'll have the opportunity for top level professional athletes and players to compete, both those who've come out of the college system or those on the international level, to compete at the elite level. Mm-hmm. And we're building this league really where we've got the opportunity to not just for the players, but the coaches and the staff and executives, and really this growth of women's soccer is it's such an opportunity.
Yeah, it brings a whole new different layers, doesn't it, to the ecosystem as well.
Yeah.
What do you think the biggest challenge will be with this new league?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things you touched on actually is the kind of the broad, you know, community that we're part of, and my experience in the game bringing that all together in this role. You know, I think that's a unique challenge, but more than anything, the potential of this league and making sure that we take the steps necessary and create the environment where we can really realize its potential.
When you look at the NWSL right now and some of the challenges they're facing, what lessons learned from what you're seeing? What do you take and think, okay, this is what we're going to apply to the Super League?
I think my experiences over the last 2 years, so I was the chief women's football officer at FIFPro the last 2 years, which is the global players union. And I can say that this is a global issue. It's an issue in women's soccer around the world. And it's one that we all need to take really seriously. I think commending and thanking the players for their strength and courage and coming forward is really important. And as we move forward, for us to take the lessons that we're learning from those that have been affected, and implementing, the things necessary in order to hear what the challenges are from the players themselves, because their voices will be critical, to our success in the future. And we look forward to working with them in that.
Yeah. Best of luck to you guys and good luck. I know 2023 second division professional league starting up with this USL Super League, Amanda at the helm. Congratulations, my friend.
Great. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, if you haven't done so, be sure to go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Plenty of video content for you to enjoy. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That brings us to the end of today's show. Be sure to stay tuned, though, as Don gives a lesson on half volleys, volleys. Craig, very supportive of him having a baby at 50. Very much worth watching as Craig and Shaka answer your tweets. As mentioned, Don back with us as well. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Why are you nodding your head like that, Don? What's going on?
Just got the music in my ears. It's quite nice.
What music? The Extra Time music or different music? He's going to be a dad again, Craig.
Yeah.
He's having another
Come
baby.
On, Craig. Come on, Craig. Come on, Look Craig. Have a smile.
That man should not be allowed to bring another human being. There has to be some legislation somewhere. Oh.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Who thinks the Extra Time music's fun?
Don clearly does, doesn't he?
That's what kind of life he leads.
Oh, well, yeah, well, exactly.
What was most exciting about your Tuesday? Oh, the Extra Time music.
Oh, it's
Craig, Craig, it's 20 past 11 in the UK and I'm sat in my garage. Right.
I don't care what time it is. You sat and watched the Fair Wireless today, so you...
Well, Don's been busy on social media, in case you missed him, which brings us to the first tweet. Shaka and Don, can you explain the difference between a normal volley, a half volley, a flying volley, and a bicycle kick? Stevie's reaction to highlights always confuses me. So if you want about half volley and volley, here's a little tip from Don.
Right, Danny, this is just for you. This is the difference between a volley and a half volley. Fletch, throw me the ball. Throw me the ball, bud. Right, volley. Bang! Right, Dougie, throw me the... That's a volley. Dougie, throw me the ball. Half volley. Bang! Half volley.
Done. Don, weren't they exactly the same things?
No, mate, honestly, I can't believe people around the world are arguing with ex-pros on a half volley and a volley. I mean, I would be stunned if Shaka and Craig disagree with what a half volley and a volley is. A half volley is when you take it fractionally off the floor, like within like a millisecond of it hitting the floor. That's a half volley. When the ball's in the air, hip height or whatever the height is, and they hit a volley with your laces, that's a volley. Out the sky, one bounce, bouncing quite high, volley.
Don't argue with people on social media. So is it life's too short?
So my thinking was a volley is not bouncing. A half volley is when it does bounce.
Yeah, you take it on your half volley.
Fraction of a second.
What you want to do, Don? Listen, if you've got time, Don, can you send that video to Greg Berhalter and tell them to show the US men's national team what a ball is?
Ball is.
See, because I like that football for dummies video there, you know. Here's a ball, we kick it towards the goal.
Oh, dear.
I mean, they were wrong.
Don't look at me.
I don't care.
Don't look at me.
I care about them. Don't play tomorrow, apparently.
Should you be doing that with your bad hip? Because you're getting a hip replacement, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I don't know when that is. That's going to be like 6 months' time, but the new baby's coming, so I might have to sack the hip operation off. I've got no idea.
It's all go. It's all go in the Hutchinson household.
It's all go.
I tell you what, when your little one arrives or whatever...
Well, it's definitely going to be little.
Or the big one?
That's when to go in.
When the baby or babies arrive...
Charlie's only one again.
Yeah. You might have twins, who knows?
Right.
You better hope, when it first opens its eyes and can speak, it doesn't call you granddad.
Listen, my plan is... Craig, my plan is, as soon as the baby comes... That's when I'm going in for my hip hop timing.
That's it. You get out. No. Do you remember when Craig anointed himself the youngest granddad in the world?
I think I am.
I know Don's the oldest dad.
43.
I know Don's the oldest.
I can't remember where it was.
Oh my goodness.
But I mean, at least I'm not. I've got a bit of a brain in my head here.
Right.
50 years old.
Right.
Congratulations.
It's done now.
Yeah, congratulations.
It's done. Right,
yeah, I mean, where's the positivity here?
Yeah, exactly. I want to point, you wouldn't have seen extra time.
I'll tell you what, you're not winning the father's race at school. At your age.
Oh, wow.
No.
Yeah, with a hip.
Not a chance.
Maybe there's a better
one. I wouldn't even go in for it.
On sports day.
A bit strange, the old granddad's running in the father's race, isn't it?
Don, just you wouldn't have seen extra time. Yesterday, we were talking to Stevie, and he said one of the worst things about the World Cup in 1986 was that he had to room on his own. And I was wondering if this is a Scottish thing where you like company, or is it a Stevie thing?
That is definitely a Stevie thing.
Yeah, I thought it might be.
I still play a bit of vets football for Liverpool. We travel around the world, wherever, and play in Hong Kong and Singapore. And when Jason McAteer, I know he's on the trip, we actually ask to room together. Because what's the point in going away to Hong Kong or Singapore for like 10 days and being in your own room? Like, I want to be in with a mate. Like, if me and Craig play, Craig will share a room with me.
No,
come on, Craig.
No. Well, trust me, I didn't mind sharing when I was playing, and we shared for all the clubs and shared it for Scotland at major championships. But trust me, I ain't sharing a room with anybody now on any trip.
Why?
When
are
I go back
in doing
my golf trip with the lads, which I didn't go this year for the pandemic, every year I go, single room.
Yeah, I think that's weird.
Financially,
I'd understand, if you want to save money.
I'm past the stage.
You want a bit of company. Do you not want some company with your mates?
I don't want any company. I can get the company at the bar. I can sit and go for dinner with people and have company. And then I can have company when I'm having a beer with them. But then I want to go to my room on my own. I don't want to... And by the way, I'm not sure if Scotland were rooming on their own in those days, but maybe Nicol believes that they were.
No, that was it. It's like, no one wanted Stevie.
Team meeting before the World Cup. Everybody's going to share a room. We're going to bring an odd person in or something. However, Nicol's on his own.
Don, this is a family show, so just asking, what was it like rooming with Stevie at Liverpool?
Well, I obviously can't tell you what really went on. But my first ever away trip with Liverpool Graham Souness was the manager, and he had a sort of unwritten rule where he wanted everyone to bond together. So he didn't put like me and Jamie Redknapp together, or me and Steve McManaman. He had like a youngster with an experienced player. So say Jamie Redknapp would room with Barnsley, or McManaman would go with Rushy, and I got Stevie Nicol. I got Stevie, and he ordered a packet of crisps and a pint of Coke. Yeah. And obviously, I'm the youngster. I've got no control of the remote whatsoever. So I'm just like thinking, like, at what point is he going to go to sleep? Because he's literally like 12 inches away from me in the next bed. And I'm thinking, I want to go to sleep. I'm so nervous. It's Stevie Nicol, and he's munching on a packet of crisps and drinking a pint of Coke the night before a game. And I'm thinking, I need to go to bed.
Oh man,
he's the last person I'd ever room with.
You wouldn't want to room with Stevie.
No, I wouldn't room him. I mean, just for purely hygiene purposes. I would not room him.
Shaka, would you like to room with people?
No,
no.
Yes. You want company, go knock on somebody's door.
Well, yes, exactly.
What about West Ham, Shaka? What about West Ham? You must have roomed someone at West Ham.
Yeah, but that's different then.
I think I roomed on my own when I played for Reading and Pompey in outside the Premier League. You had a roommate. It was a cost savings. But when I played in the Premier League, I'm pretty sure I roomed on my own throughout.
And did you miss company?
No, I was all right.
I always roomed with.
No. Okay. Dom, what's the percentage chance that England win the World Cup?
10.
Standard.
That's decent.
So, for Craig, any comments on Gini Wijnaldum's comments about not being happy at PSG? Should he have left Liverpool in the first place? His comments weren't that strong. He just said it's not all great at the moment.
What did he say?
He just says, you know, it's not all ideal at the moment because obviously he's not playing as much as he thought it was going to.
So.
In sports.
Sorry.
Some music that was just started playing. That isn't the extra time music. And
I do believe
studio.
We're on SportsCentre.
What's happening? SportsCentre, why are those English people talking about rooming together?
Somebody sat in a bar now in Las Vegas. What the hell is that lot doing on SportsCentre?
Okay.
I don't think, you know, at the end of the day, you make decisions to leave clubs, and sometimes it's tougher than you believe. Look at Philippe Coutinho going to Barcelona. So, you know, sometimes it just takes time. People make comments. That's what happens.
Don, who would you rather have manager at Newcastle? Antonio Conte or your mate Frank Lampard?
Ooh.
Antonio Conte, because he would then guarantee the calibre of players that would follow. So I think, you know, when we do make that first signing, and listen, we are dreaming. Shaka knows what it's like to play up there. I've stood on the Gallagher end all my life as a youngster. It's an amazing place to go and play your football and watch your football. And we're not even bothered if we don't win the Premier League down inside 5 or 10 years. We're not even bothered. But we just want a chance on match day one next season, knowing we've got a 1% chance of winning the league. That's all we've ever wanted. And now with these owners, with the money, with a brand new manager, we feel as though we're going places. We've got a sniff. We've got a chance.
So on that note, what position should Newcastle strengthen in January 1st, Don?
All 11.
I mean, take your pick. I mean, all of them. I mean, just go and get as many good players as you can get. I mean, I've read the reported rumour that in January we are allowed, because of financial fair play, to spend £200 million because we've been, you know, so backward in signing players over the last few years. There's money actually in the kitty. So with £200 million to go and buy players, what could you get Coutinho for at a Barca? You could get him for, what, £20 million?
God, why on earth would you want Coutinho? Have you seen him play over the last 3 years?
Well, isn't he?
Barcelona would drive him.
Are you telling me there's not a player in Coutinho who's not better than what we've got?
No, if I'm Newcastle, I'm going nowhere near Coutinho. You're going James Rodriguez at Everton all over again.
What, you think Joe Linton's better than Coutinho?
I'm saying if I'm spending money, I'm not spending it on Coutinho.
I would take Coutinho at Newcastle all day long. I'd take Rudiger.
I think that's a slippery slope.
You're not spending money, Don, to buy better players than what you've got. You're spending money to buy players that are going to compete with City and Liverpool and Chelsea. I'm not saying
could you go to Napoli? Koulibaly, I'm not saying he's going to go to Newcastle, but he's been linked with moves left, right and centre, and no one would pay €70 million for him or pounds for him. Newcastle now can go to Napoli and go, wallop. There's £100 million. We love him.
Yeah. It's a good player. It's better than Coutinho.
Playing all these players now in Newcastle.
Apparently, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Did you ever get into the head of any striker? Meaning no matter how many shots he took, he just couldn't score on you?
Not.
Were you somebody's kryptonite?
I don't know. I don't remember things like that.
Right.
You see these guys twice a year.
I think people overestimate what goes through players' minds.
Yeah, of course, I suppose people
do. The CD strikers are best, you know, twice
Zlatan,
a year.
Zlatan obviously wrote in his book about how great you
were.
Yes,
that's right.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
You must have interviewed him.
No.
He wrote about you.
Now from the World Cup, Shaka's performance against Sweden in the World Cup.
2006.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yes.
Didn't realise that.
There you are.
Yeah, I'll send you the video.
Do that.
And the book.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of you guys ever run a marathon?
No.
Half. I did a half marathon.
Half marathon. A marathon. If so, what are your personal best? I ran Manchester Marathon this weekend and it was painful but totally worth all the training.
Yeah, I did.
What was that time?
I've just not told you guys.
Yeah, right.
2 hours 14.
2 hours 13.
So that was wearing a set of miners boots.
No, I did.
And wearing a raincoat.
I did in about...
Right. Why were you wearing miners boots and a raincoat?
Because I wanted the extra weight.
Okay, right.
I was worried I was going to win. No, I couldn't even run a half marathon. My calves just couldn't do it.
Okay, so half marathon is 13 miles.
13.1 to be exact. Yeah.
Where was this, Shank?
In Boston.
Ago, when you were working here? Yes, I remember.
In Boston.
Yeah.
I remember you training for this.
Yes.
You looked ill.
You looked ill. I didn't want to say at the time.
In 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, 2018.
And what was your time? Do you remember?
I think it was about 2 hours, 7 minutes.
Is that decent? Yeah. I don't know anything about time.
No, really.
It's my personal best.
Well, yes, what, isn't it? Don, what about you? You dodgy hit.
I mean, well, exactly. I mean, you know the answer that's coming. I'd love to do the Northeast Run for Charity. But honestly, I've got no lateral cartilage in my right knee. Oh, my hip shot to bits. There's no chance of me getting around 13 mile. Not a chance.
Go on, you're having a baby. No wonder it took him so long. He stopped for a lie down, book a holiday,
all day,
cup of tea,
exactly.
Cup of coffee.
It was hard. I ain't gonna lie.
I couldn't even get a mile or two now. No. Calves, just the calves, man.
Two of my toenails fell out after. pounded the old tarmac for 13 miles.
Not easy.
No.
Oh, you're telling me? I don't know why you're telling
me. Do you remember when Stevie tweeted out that picture of his feet?
Why you would never room them.
No, it's horrible feet.
You have to tell them what a bar of soap is.
That is it. Thank you very much. Take care, Don. Listen to some extra time music to get you to bed. We'll be back tomorrow. Are you here tomorrow, guys?
I'm not.
I'm on the show tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm not here.
Oh, you're not in the studio? You're at home?
I'm working from home because it's such a long way in.
Right, okay. You can run in.
20 minutes.
So be sure to join us
then. I might do that.
What? Yes. It could take a while. Don't your toenails fall off. Ugh.